Hi, and welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson, your host, and as always, I'm really glad you've decided to join us. So after the 2020 census and the 2021 redistricting redraw, we saw a real shakeup in our congressional politics in this state. The new map looks really different than the map that we have been working with for the last decade, and the redraw forced several incumbents to decide to run in places where they hadn't been the representative before. The new maps also produced certain races that are going to be, I think, a lot closer than the races that we saw over the last 10 years with different districts. The 7th Congressional District is one of the new districts that is projected to be pretty close. It is maybe even going to be the closest congressional race. The district, which includes Lansing and Ingham, Livingston, and Shiawassee counties, has Congresswoman Alyssa Slotkin facing off against State Senator Tom Barrett, who is a Republican out of Charlotte, Michigan. It's a very split district, with voters only slightly favoring President Biden in 2020. And State Senator Barrett has been playing that up, noting that Congresswoman Slotkin votes mostly with the president. Her record really reflects a strong allegiance to the Biden administration. But while Slotkin and Barrett are really different on politics, they have some similarities as well. They both have experience dealing directly with the country's national security apparatus, and both want to expand the amount of money we spend on the nation's military budget. Before we vote in November, we hope here on Detroit Today to talk to a number of the people who are vying for seats in Congress here in Southeast Michigan and all around the state. Next week, we are going to talk with Congresswoman Slotkin on Tuesday on the program to talk about her positions, her record in Congress, and why she's running in this new 7th Congressional District. But before we get to her, we have invited State Senator Tom Barrett onto the show to discuss why he's running in this district and what kind of changes he would hope to make if he is elected to Congress. State Senator Barrett, welcome to Detroit Today.
Thank you, Stephen. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So I want to start here. Tell me why you're running in the 7th Congressional District and what you think you will offer to citizens who live in that district if you're elected.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for that and for the introduction. And you're right. This is going to be a very, very competitive congressional district that, you know, as you pointed out, you know, is brought about by this every 10-year redistricting process that takes place across the country and certainly here in Michigan. It is a very, very highly competitive district, one that went for President Trump in 2016, narrowly for President Biden in 2020. And I'm running, this is my hometown and my home district. I moved to Eaton County where I live and where I'm raising a family 4 days after I came home from a deployment in Iraq when my wife and I were married. And we've been now raising a family in this district. And I'm running for Congress because I feel the country is on the wrong track. I think that the cost of living for families in my district and across the country and across the state is simply reaching an unaffordable high rate that families can't keep up with. We've seen gas hit, you know, it was $4.50 a gallon now as I was in my district on my way to work today. So everything from groceries, like I'm raising four kids and, you know, our grocery bill is not going down. It's definitely going up, not only as our kids grow, but as the rate of inflation grows. And family budgets aren't keeping pace with this crushing rate of inflation. We have a cold winter coming and fuel and heating costs for home heating are going to be higher again. And we have issues of crime and security in our communities. Lansing had a record-breaking number of murders last year. That's the central geographic city of this congressional district where I'm running. And we have a border that's unsecure and fentanyl pouring into every city in America right now. And there's just been a lax enforcement on the border. And then we have national security issues. You pointed out my background. I'm 22 years in the Army, just retired earlier this year. I deployed around the world to Iraq, Kuwait, Guantanamo Bay, and South Korea. And I was heartbroken and devastated to see what happened during our withdrawal of Afghanistan in the final days of a 20-year-long conflict where we had sacrificed so many lives, to see our president just throw in the towel and forfeit the game, allowing the Taliban to be placed in charge of security for our troops in Afghanistan in those final days, directly leading to those Marines who were killed, the 13 best of America, our Marines who were killed in those final days, and dozens more who were injured. I can't pretend that's not happening. This district now encompasses the area that I've represented in the Michigan State Senate, the area where my wife and I are raising a family, and where we want to stand up for the interests of families and working people and those that feel the country's on the wrong track like we do.
So I want to start with this question of inflation, which, of course, everybody is dealing with. Mm-hmm. And everyone seems pretty dismayed by how expensive things have gotten. You put a lot of the blame for that on the spending plans that President mm-hmm. Biden and the Congress have indulged over the last two years, but these spending plans have been really popular, including the Inflation Reduction Act and the CHIPS Act, which both take time to be put into action and are kind of long-term plans to grow the economy and to grow opportunity. So tell me why you think those were the wrong things to do, and I guess I'd also like to hear what you would do differently that you think would curb inflation.
Sure. And I think it's important to point out how we got into this situation in the first place, which was by the just crushing amount of spending that came out of Washington, D.C. When you print and spend trillions of dollars, not billions, but trillions, plural, of dollars, it simply devalues the currency that's already out circulating in the economy.
In the short working term, people, yes.
Well, in the short and long term. I mean, it you're not going to make up that value. I mean, if you have a dollar today and they print a trillion more, your dollar is worth a lot less than it was the day before. And that's irrefutably true of what's happened. And the Biden administration has doubled and tripled and quadrupled down on spending more and more. They're trying to spend their way out of an inflationary crisis. And you can't simply print more money to continue to do that. It's only going to make the problem worse. Even their Inflation Reduction Act that they, you know, claimed was going to solve all these problems, economists point out that it is not going to have any effect on inflation. In fact, Alyssa Slotkin, my opponent, admitted that it's not going to have any effect on inflation. So they call it the Inflation Reduction Act. And those that even voted for it said, yeah, it's not going to reduce inflation. So to me, we have to simply stop. We got to start by stopping the bleeding of what's causing this problem in the very first place, which is the out-of-control spending coming out of Washington, D.C. They spent money on just reckless things, luxury golf courses, bailouts for different things, stimulus checks for people in federal prison, things that just did not make sense that pumped more money into the economy. On top of that, in the Inflation Reduction Act, they added 87,000 new IRS agents. They're going to go after working people and small business owners in our country to meet out a pound of flesh.
Well, the IRS money is actually going to go to people who most of it is going to go to help process returns faster than we are. I mean, they haven't grown that in a long time.
They are going to add some new enforcement agents as well.
But you're a law and order guy, right? People who don't pay their taxes should be held accountable.
But do we need more IRS agents than we can fit into Spartan Stadium on a sold-out Saturday afternoon? I mean, they say that they want to chase the billionaires with these IRS agents. There are 700 billionaires in the United States. You could assign one agent for every one of them.
Well, I mean, there are a lot of other people who are not paying their fair share of taxes as well. I know you have a hard out in a few minutes, but I want to give you a chance to differentiate, I guess, between what you see as reckless spending is what you're describing mm-hmm. these new bills as, and the Trump tax cuts, which mm-hmm. every economist says has taken trillions of dollars out of the Treasury and has not grown the economy long term, the way that we expect it to. I'm assuming you supported those tax cuts. Why do you think that's different and better than spending federal money in a way that invests in opportunity and growth in the long term? And yeah, it absolutely is having the short term effect you describe. But talk to me about how you see that as different.
Sure. And tax policy and simply rewarding and favoring winners and losers, as my opponent has supported, by taking our tax dollars out of our pocket of working people that, you know, pay that. It's not optional. You know, these paying taxes, as you pointed out, is not optional. This is a forced mandate on people that takes money out of their pockets, and they want to simply reward winners and losers. My opponent has supported these corporate welfare schemes that take money out of working families' pockets and simply give them away to some of the most privileged global corporations in the world. I have stood steadfast against that in the state legislature. When you talk about having a competitive tax code that allows individuals to make investments of their own and make decisions about where they're going to place their resources and where they're going to compete and win and take risks, some of those risks will pay off and it will be to their benefit. And it'll be to the benefit of our country as we raise the standard of living for people, as we innovate and find new opportunities, not when you take money out of their pocket and simply give it away to other people. And frankly, when you give it away to some of the most profitable global corporations like they've done in the state legislature and now what they're seeking to do in the federal government.
You're talking about the incentives. Well,
they're corporate welfare direct tax.
Yeah, right. I agree with that. But I guess I was asking you about tax cuts. I mean, we had an incredible amount of tax cuts during the Trump administration. Yeah, go ahead.
And our tax code was uncompetitive internationally. So we had corporations leaving the country to find a better tax structure somewhere else. If we can bring those companies onshore back to the United States, capture that tax revenue, provide growth and opportunity here, that's what we need to be looking at doing. And I'm not suggesting that every single tax and, you know, plan is better or worse than somebody else's. What I am saying is we need to draw a line in the sand and say we're not going to do a wealth transfer from working families to global corporations like my opponent has just beat me over the head with. And I will tell you, I'm a Republican. I believe in free market principles, but I'm not someone who's going to take money from one person, from a working person, and hand it over to a corporate CEO. Mary Barra at General Motors makes 461 times what the starting line worker at General Motors makes. And we gave them $700 million in state tax money that came from working families. It equals over $160,000 per job that they're going to create. And the workers in those jobs are only going to make $46,000.
Yeah,
you'll
get no argument from me about that kind of policy.
And again,
I know
attack they've had against me.
Yeah, I know you've got a heart out, and I want to respect that. But I do want to ask you about recent accusations by the group End Citizens United that says you spent $40,000 of your state campaign funds on your federal campaign, and that's a violation, they say. I want to give you a chance to respond to that accusation.
Sure. No, I appreciate the question. It's a frivolous accusation launched by a group that's endorsed and contributed to my opponent. Like a lot of candidates, you even pointed out in your introduction, there was a lot of change-up in the redistricting process this year in Michigan. I was looking at, you know, what that effect was going to have in the district that I live in and represent and what type of outcome that was going to have. I had a advisor that I hired to look at that who had been through the redistricting of a similar nature in California that also has a redistricting commission. This was the first time in Michigan's history we had ever gone through this. So I was seeking good counsel to help, you know, help me figure out how this process was going to play out, what effect it was going to have. You know, it's really just a frivolous complaint launched against me by my opponent and those that support her to, you know, distract from the issues of a failing economy, soaring gas prices, and other challenges that we're seeing in the country that people really care about deeply.
Last question. We've seen a lot of doubt cast on the electoral process unfairly, most of it unsubstantiated, candidates saying, hey, even after the election's over, saying, hey, I didn't actually lose because there are all these votes that were cast that don't count, or all these other votes that didn't count. And I wonder if you can commit to accepting the results of this election one way or another,
absolutely.
If you win or if you lose.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I'm very comfortable with the people of this district making their decision, going to the voting booth, casting their vote, and selecting their next member of Congress. That is absolutely something that we have to respect. And I respect the people's decision. I'm confident that, you know, given the contrast between myself and my opponent, that the people of this district are going to look for a new direction, because we're heading down the wrong path right now. And I completely respect their decision. And, you know, we're going to have this campaign. It's a spirited, we're down to just less than 5 weeks to go. We're getting into the narrow end of the funnel here.
Yeah.
And we know that there's a lot on the line, and both sides are aggressively campaigning, and, you know, that's a good thing for democracy to have these differing opinions, and for people to be able to engage and voice their opinion and, you know, speak with their vote. And so I absolutely respect that.
Okay. All right. Tom Barrett, a state senator and aspiring congressman from the state of Michigan. I really appreciate you coming on to talk about your plans for the campaign.
Thank you for having me.
Good luck with the rest of the campaign.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to stay here in Michigan, but we're going to pivot to talk about the real struggle facing caregivers right now. A recent Detroit News report really dug into those challenges and defines a breaking point, really, that caregivers are so close to here in the state of Michigan. Stay with us for more Detroit Today.